Tens of thousands of people are on the brink of starvation in Syria, 20,000 of them in the disputed Damascus suburb of Yarmouk. Food has been scarce there since the beginning of the year, but conditions have dramatically worsened of late after the regime blocked supplies in an attempt to force rebel groups inside there to surrender. The Guardian's Middle East correspondent Martin Chulov is on the line from Beirut. Good morning, Martin. Update us, if you would, please, about the situation in this besieged suburb of Damascus.
Well, this is now the 13th consecutive day that food parcels have not been allowed to enter the Yarmouk Palestinian refugee camp. And that comes with almost next to no food inside at all. There are 18,000 residents, we understand. There may also be 2,000 more who have drifted in from other parts of Damascus. They have no food, none whatsoever. And the food parcels that that UNRWA, the United Nations Relief Works Agency, has been trying to get in, have been sitting outside the border for the past 13 days. It's a truly desperate situation with people at real risk of starvation at any time soon.
What are communications like to that district, and what kind of stories are you hearing from the people there?
Well, we can speak to residents of the camp, and we do, and the stories are catastrophic. They're desperate pleas from mothers and fathers for food. They say they are eating animal food, in some cases boiling leaves, but there's barely any foliage left. It's a concrete part of Damascus, though. There are very few gardens there. Most of the grass has been cut up and boiled in pots. And the same with the leaves. All the wood that was being boiled in recent weeks, it doesn't exist anymore. So there are meagre supplies. There is very, very little water. The conversations that we have had with Palestinians who are living there in recent days have been truly heartbreaking, because there's very little that we or anybody else can do to bring any end to their suffering. That lies with those who are in control of the checkpoints leading into Yarmouk. And so far, over the last 2 weeks, there has been no flexibility whatsoever.
What has changed then, Martin, to prevent those food parcels getting through?
Well, I guess a bit of context here. The Palestinian refugee camp of Yarmouk was the biggest in Syria. It was home to around 250,000 Palestinians who were living well there. They had almost equal rights to the Syrian state of Syrian citizens up until, that is, the around about December of 2012, where the insurrection that had been spreading right across Damascus finally reached the camp itself. Large numbers of people left to Lebanon, and those who have stayed behind have been in an ever-worsening humanitarian siege. Now, over the last 3 months from the start of the year, that has worsened, I guess, tenfold, with the UNRWA unable to get supplies in regularly. But in the last couple of weeks, that's got even worse, with absolutely no food parcels getting in. And bearing in mind that people were already food-deprived, water-deprived, they were living off very scarce rations. And there seems to have been a decision taken in recent weeks just to... it's a starve or submit policy. If those who do leave the camp and cross into regime-held areas can be fed. But there is a real risk of detention, so many would rather stay behind without any food rather than disappear.
And what's known about the numbers of rebel activists who are in there that clearly Assad is trying to force out?
There are militant groups within the camp, and there certainly are Palestinians who do support them. There are 18 different factions within Yarmouk. Some of them are pro-regime, some of them are anti-regime. It's difficult to actually quantify how many of the 18,000 people who remain there are rusted on to the opposition cause. It really is difficult to pin that down. However, it is fair to say that the regime does suspect that among this 18,000 are large numbers of people who are hostile to them. And they, as you say, are the people that they are trying to get to.
Separately, France has accused the Assad regime of using chemicals in recent attacks. Now, has there been any substantiation of that?
Not yet, but the US added its weight to the allegations last night too, and the Israelis were the first to raise this around about 10 days ago. The opposition have complained that there have been 9 incidents of people suffering gas-like symptoms in opposition parts of the country since February in 5 different locations. These allegations have been reasonably well documented, and there have been attempts to get out into Turkey and into Europe some biological samples, which rebel groups say will prove their allegations. There's been a lot of chatter about this within opposition circles over recent months, just as there was in the lead up to the very large use of sarin in Damascus last August. And this has been a constant theme of the atrocities in Syria over many years now, and people are, I guess, renewing their attention on these allegations, but there has been no substantiation yet.
And finally, Martin, presidential elections announced for the 3rd of June, described by the opposition and indeed by the United States as well as a parody of democracy. Does this decision to call elections, does it represent or reflect a growing confidence on the part of the regime?
I think it does. I think it's fair to say that. This is going to be some kind of a process which Assad will legitimise him as leader. It's important to spell out, though, that almost everybody who was opposed to him isn't able to stand as an alternative Syrian president, or indeed to vote against him. All of those who have left the country, and there's 2.6 million, as far as we can gauge, are unable to vote unless they can make their way to an embassy. And even then, they could only register if they'd crossed out of Syria through legitimate crossing points rather than fled for their lives over porous borders. In addition to that, 6.5 million people inside the country can't vote unless they can make their way back to government-held areas. So it's going to be a process that's difficult to, by any stretch of the imagination, to stack up as representative of what's taking place. But as you say, it does reflect a growing confidence among Assad and his supporters that he is prevailing in this grinding and terribly devastating war.
Martin, thank you indeed for that update and analysis. That's The Guardian's Middle East correspondent Martin Chuloff on the line from Beirut.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.